the big story for me, or the most interesting, a lot of these stories you go, oh, yeah, you know, well, of course, Josh Kennedy, we knew that was happening. And then Melbourne, Jay Clark broke the story that Melbourne are into or are speaking to.
Have spoken to.
Brodie Grundy about, I would imagine, filling the void that they suspect. You wouldn't be talking to him if you didn't think that Luke Jackson's going. So let's just put that to the one side, because it's no good talking to him if you. They might hold out a hope that Luke's staying, and on the off chance, you know, Brodie, what's the chances of you? How do you see that? Is that something that and the other side of it?
Just what smart clubs do.
Does Collingwood go, you know, we're happy for not happy, but if Brodie's going to go somewhere, we don't want him to go to a contender. We want him to go somewhere that's not going to be a contender against us, who are hopefully, you know, competing for a fight. What's your reaction? What's your first gut reaction to hearing that?
Well, I think it's just smart. A football club losing one of their young ruckmen and replacing it as best they can, as quick as they possibly can. Like that's smart. That's exactly what they should do. I just wonder, though, how he and Maxi Gawn, if they were to how they would work in tandem, those two.
That was my gut reaction.
Because generally there's one ruckman
dominant,
who is dominant and sits above the other ruckman. Mm-hmm. Although in Melbourne's case, it's been a little bit more about the different ways their two ruckmen play
and
what they bring to the game.
Yeah, and there's also a needs basis that Bax has got to go forward and try and clunk a mark, which Melbourne's forwards can't do, a big contested mark. So
has Grundy ever demonstrated that? Or has he not demonstrated that because he's been required to play more on the ball as opposed to going forward?
Well, that's the thing. You know, I look at it and go, maybe they see Max transitioning a bit more to that forward role.
Mm.
And they would do that with Luke Jackson. But Luke, you know, if he goes, then they're thinking, well, Grundy comes in and becomes more the 60-40 ruckman, and Max is the 46-40-60, maybe.
Right.
I don't know. That's it was news to me when I heard that and read that from Jay Clark, so I'm trying to get my head around it.
It is an insight, though, too, isn't it, that there are a lot of discussions going on around now about with players. Like, we know, you know, Zerhard's been reported, and we know Dugowie's been meeting with clubs as well. So there are a lot of discussions, clandestine-type meetings that are currently taking place out there. And everyone in footy is saying that this will be the busiest pre-national draft trade period in the history of the game.
Which has been said before, but I think that's real this year. If you just – now, then Melbourne, I wouldn't think, it could pay the $950 or $1 million, whatever Grundy's on. So Collingwood would have to
– Why, though?
What do you mean, why?
Well, obviously they would have been offering Jackson a lot of money
Not that much.
What would they be offering him? Do you think 700?
Yeah, maybe.
They'd have to go at least that deep.
Yeah, so they'd have to have Collingwood pay some of the deal, right?
Mm.
If you're a Melbourne fan, or if you're a footy fan, what would be better for him, Grundy or Dugowie? If you were to target a Collingwood person in this instance, which is a better fit, Grundy or Dugowie?
It's a needs basis, though, isn't it?
Well, the need is
the need. If Jackson goes, the need is for them to be able to replace Jackson.
And they've got a massive need in their forward half.
Yeah, they have, but it might be that player's not available now, so they go for the one that is available, potentially, in Grundy. And then they go to the draft and they try and find themselves a young forward.
Dugowie's said to be available. He's as available as Grundy.
Yeah, but do you see Dugowie as a forward, or do you see him as a midfielder?
Well, you could see between he and Petrarca, you'd get a damn good one of both.
Oh, no, you would. I mean, he'd fit into that team nicely in some capacity. Mm. Taylor Walker, what is it that you want to talk about regarding Taylor Walker this morning?
I was just trying to remember back to the day when this camp stuff, we haven't talked too much about this. Taylor was defensive about the camp. And,
well, the whole of South Australia were.
Yeah. This is what he had to say about the camp back on the 2018.
The camp that we went on as a footy club, personally I found one of the most beneficial and most rewarding camp I've ever been on as an individual. And I'd encourage any of my best mates or family members to do the same thing. Our football club, like most other AFL clubs in the competition, are exploring ways of being able to get an edge over other teams in the AFL.
Right.
And that's in the mental space. I think it was one of the best camps I've ever been on.
Do you know of any players?
Speak for all of them, yeah.
Do you know of any other players that are mentally disturbed?
Not that I'm aware of.
Right. So that's March 2018 on Triple M. So and that other voice was obviously Mark Rusciuto too.
So now I guess what is – so Taylor said today in the paper, I did everything I could to help. You know, clearly there were issues
right
at the club from the camp. I put my head on the pillow at night. I tried. I had meetings at home. That must have developed because on March 2018, he wasn't aware of anyone that had any mental issues.
Yeah, and in fairness to him, we don't know what the timeline was, but this is what he had to say yesterday.
Yeah, I said he was the captain at the time of the footy club and those boys being past players, not great, to be honest. It's quite upsetting to hear that those guys are still feeling the effects of the camp. What I will say is that the camp, a lot of people took different things out of it. And I personally, I've said it, I took a positive experience out of it. But that does not take away from the feelings of hurt that those boys are going through at the moment.
Yep.
So very cognizant of the hurt now. I guess what, you know, if we had Taylor here, he would say, well, as it developed after I made those statements in 2018, I'd become aware that there were issues that developed and therefore I had to try and facilitate and mediate. It's just sad.
It is. Just to put a full stop on this, so John Olsen, the Crows chairman, also had this to say on SEN South Australia yesterday.
The stories that Eddie Betts and Josh Jenkins recounted last week were confronting. And it clearly indicated that the adverse effects from the camp have been felt and continue. It's our responsibility, first and foremost, to say apologise to them, and that's what we wanted to do. And secondly, to reach out to them, which I've done in both instances, as has Tim Silver, to have a communication with them and Bryce Gibbs and anybody else who might be adversely affected from the camp to address any issues and see where we could be of assistance going forward.
Right. Now they're doing everything humanly possible to make sure
that
they apologise and they smooth out any differences that players have with the club and each other, that type of thing. Yeah. Which, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's a bit late for that. But it's never too late to apologise, is it?
No, it's not. But you've got to have good crisis management people, don't you?
Well, of course you do.
At your club when these things happen. You've got to be able to anticipate. You've got to be able to see, you know, you've got to be 2, 3, 4, 5 steps ahead. And yeah, I think Roo, if he had his time again on the day after this all broke on his radio station where he just sort of basically said, oh, I hope Eddie can move on. All those sort of statements now come back and bite you on the backside. So let's hope that they can find some peace and resolution, all those players. And I don't know whether there'll be more players that come in. Maybe there'll be more that come in. Now we've got legal action too being spoken about as well. So I don't think it's particularly going away. Just
kidding. A sports news update for Host Plus, an industry super fund for all Australians, run only to benefit its members. Search Compare Host Plus today.
And now in 13th Beach, he wants the Brisbane jumper back. I thought that it wouldn't be that big a deal, but if there's great passion for it, then wear it every single away game or home. I don't care which jumper you wear, to be honest.
That's true.
Maybe I'm wrong on the passion for the that maroon and yoke BB jumper.
So what was the bear, though?
The bear?
Yeah.
What do you mean, what was the bear?
Was it a grizzly bear?
It was a drop
or a brown bear?
It's a koala bear sort of set up, wasn't it?
It's not a koala bear. It's not a koala bear. It's a koala. They're not bears.
Well, here we go. You deal with Anno. He's passionate about the bear's jumper.
I'm not talking about the jumper. I'm saying the bear itself is a koala.
Right. Okay, it's a koala bear.
And they can turn nasty. Did you see that?
It's a koala bear.
They're not a koala bear.
It is a koala bear.
They're a koala marsupial.
And that's a koala bear.
All right. Mitch has joined us from Charles. I can't bear much more of this.
Mitch, get in here and help us out, young man. How are you?
It looks very much like a koala bear.
It's not a bear.
Patrick Cripps, has it divided the footy world, or do we just accept it as one of those decisions that can sometimes go either way?
I think it's divided 17 fan groups to one fan group. I think Carlton fans are pretty passionate about it, and you can understand why when they're already missing a few key players, and then you throw Cripps into that as well. They've got to today to decide whether they want to appeal it, which you wouldn't rule that out completely given the route you've seen some clubs take previously. But at this stage, he's going to miss the last two games, Patrick Cripps, and The submission from the tribunal at the end of all of it last night, Gaz, was that while they tried to compare the Willy Rioli one, the difference was this wasn't a marking contest, and Cripps, engaged in what they described as a bumping action. So he cops his 2 weeks with high contact and looks set to miss those last two games.
Yeah, they determined he had another play at the another play on the ball as opposed to the man, and that's so you're saying that right now they haven't ruled out going again to the next stage.
I've put a text in to the club. They haven't got back to me as yet, which usually suggests they might be weighing things up. But okay. I think it would be unlikely, but you wouldn't rule it out given what clubs have done and given how important he is. It could be the difference when a finals berth or not.
Just quickly, koalas are not bears too. I'm glad we're
colloquially there.
They are not a bear. Dyson Heppel, Sam Edmonds talked about this yesterday. He said that there's a 4-year deal on the table, 2 to play, 2 as a coach beyond that at the Gold Coast Suns. What can you tell us about the links to Dyson Heppel? I know everybody sort of chased it up yesterday. Is there anything further you can add to that story?
I was out there at Essendon yesterday chatting to Dyson as he left, as you do with these sort of stories, Tim. And he didn't give much away. He admitted that it was, to paraphrase, it was still on a knife's edge. He said he's not sure which way it will play out, Dyson Heppel, which doesn't give Essendon fans the most of confidence that he will stay. I think what through this process would be happening right now is that he's got a 1-year deal from Essendon. He's going to be offered 2 years from Gold Coast, and whatever coaching component is thrown in comes after that. But I think in an ideal world, Dyson would get either a straight 2 years from Essendon, which would allow him to stay, or even a 1-year option with a trigger. So he might need, 11, 12, 15 games, something like that, to reach a second year. So I think he's just holding out hope to see what happens with Essendon. It's not dissimilar to the one last year with Robbie Tarrant, where he was at North Melbourne. He was offered 1 year, 1 year, 1 year, all year. And then the ruse came late with a 2-year deal. By that stage, it was too late. He jumped to go to Richmond. So I guess there is a timeline. There is a tipping point at some stage, but Dyson Heppel, I don't think, is there just yet. He's waiting to see if Essendon up their offer.
Jay Clark from the Herald Sun broke the story that Melbourne were interested in Brodie Grundy. What was your thoughts on that?
I was a bit surprised given the money they've got tied up in a lot of other players. We know the midfielders, you've got Max Gawn as well. Jake Lever and Stephen May aren't cheap. And then they've got Ed Langdon on a long-term contract as well. If they were able to fit Brodie Grundy in and not have Collingwood chew up too much of that contract, it would be a piece of list management genius. But the fact that they have met with him gives it some clout, I guess. And you look at the situation around Brodie Grundy having met with the Giants, having met with Melbourne at a minimum as well. It just shows how proactive his management is, that they're on the front foot, that while Collingwood hasn't officially put him on the table yet, that they're getting ahead of the game, that we're only 2 weeks away from finals and these things can move quickly. So they'll get on the front foot, meet with these clubs and give themselves the best understanding.
Hey, Mitch, as a journalist, what's your understanding about What's your understanding about talking to players directly that are under contract at another club? Is it against any rule in the game?
There is no rule as such, Tim. And a quote from Graham Wright sticks out to me from trade period 3 or 4 years ago in saying that while it's not the best of practice and we all know it goes on, you've just got to get on with it and do it, because if you're not doing it, then the 17 other clubs will be, and you're going to be missing out on world's best practice around getting players in the door. The Lin Jong one was a famous one all those years ago. I know Travis Boak flew to Adelaide and that was a big one at the time, but he was out of contract. I don't think it happens every day at footy clubs, and we do our best to find them, Tim, but I think it does go on, and when they are unearthed, it's just a smaller percentage of the ones that are actually happening behind the scenes.
We know Patrick Dangerfield has had a scan on his calf. It didn't show anything significant there, but is it worth the risk? Do you think the Cats will take that risk and play him, or do you think, given that there's a couple of games to go and then there's a bye, that they'll be super conservative?
He's pretty adamant that he'll play this game, being his 299th, and then play the last game at home against West Coast at GMHBA as his 300th. Tim, but I'm with you. Get on a flight up to Gold Coast with pretty much top spot already sewn up. Is there a risk there? Absolutely. And I heard him speaking with Jared Waitley yesterday, talking about the paranoia that's going to come with that. Is he going to be in a scenario now where 40, 50 minutes before every game when he's warming up. He'll be thinking of that same moment that he had on the weekend against St Kilda, where he felt his calf tighten up and he couldn't release that pain on deceleration. So I think it's one the Cats have to weigh up. He had a running session Monday. He didn't do much at training yesterday. Let's see how much he does on the track today. But he's pretty keen to put his hand up and play.
What's anything going around from a coaching point of view? Yeah, what's the very low? No, you've got your finger on every single pulse out there. What's happening with the coaches?
Try to make some calls on it yesterday, Gaz. The only sentiment that I get is that Alistair Clarkson is likely to make his decision before the end of the home and away season. So I think we're going to know by next Friday. I think we'll have some sort of a better understanding or a decision from Alistair Clarkson as to where he goes. If Port Adelaide wants to get into that race, they may need to make a call on Ken Hinckley, but I think that's looking increasingly unlikely after yesterday.
And the Kangas all in on him? Are they all in? Not talking to one other coach?
Not talking to one other coach. They haven't even formed a subcommittee. The interesting part of this is Sonia Hood leading the whole scenario, where usually in this situation you compare it to the Giants with their CEO, Dave Matthews. He's been at the forefront of this. So what that means for Ben Amafio will leave question marks if it is Alistair Clarkson who comes in. The fact that Sonia, as president, has been driving this single-handedly. Let's see if Alistair Clarkson lobs at Arden Street what that means for Ben Amafio, the CEO, given he's had not much part to play in this Alistair Clarkson pursuit.
Excellent report. As always, we appreciate you jumping on and giving us some of your very valuable time, Mitch.
Thanks, guys.
Mitch Cleary.
Thanks, Mitch.
Number one man.
Nice. Nice bit of work.
A lot of people want us to get back to the bear debate. I've made a decision to say that we can revisit that.
Are you prepared to retract your remarks from earlier or not?
Oh, I think it's important to a lot of people that we establish it, so we'll get back to it. No question about that. Big Mick wants to know, just Mick. The $35 reserve seat we spoke about, he said, is that for children or adults? That's adults, Mick.
Yeah. And you say that it applies for the first two rounds of the finals, don't you? They're general admittance tickets.
I don't say. I'm actually telling you that's the case.
That's right, but you're reading that from somewhere.
Yeah, so that's just reserve seat, $35, Mick. That's for adults. So I think that's pretty good value.
If I was Patrick Dangerfield and there was any tiny inclination that he had some calf soreness, what benefit is it to him to play this week or next week, or what? You want him for the last month of the season, the finals.
Everything they've done, Geelong, suggests that they've got their eyes on the most important time of the year. So conservatism will be the play here. Not wise words from the Yoda.
There's nothing worse than a dicky calf, Gary.
They call me Caramello.
Koala.
They call me Caramello.
Koala. Welcome back to the program. Tim, I love it when you bring a story to the table that I'm not familiar with, and you said to us, we're going to need to talk to this man. Ryan Leaf is his name, and we did our homework. We did listen to some podcasts. The best way to describe it is that he's walked out of college football as one of the, if not the hottest prospect in football, along with Peyton Manning is a name
at that time,
we're all very familiar with, and he was a number two draft pick, went to the San Diego Chargers, and his story... Well, it went from being at the top of the world and it spiraled and ended up in jail and has now re-emerged and it's got a really uplifting story to tell. And we've tracked him down. He's been good enough to join us. Ryan, welcome to the program. Welcome to Australia.
Thank you very much. This is pretty amazing what we can do with technology. I love it.
It's great. We've got the Zoom happening so we can see you. Where do we find you right now? Are you in L.A.?
Yeah, I'm in Los Angeles. Just spent the morning hosting the Rich Eisen Show, talking about all things when it comes to American football and just got home. I'm home with my family here and they were really interested to see me do a show in Australia. So that's fun.
Ryan, before we talk about the journey and all the other things associated with your life to this point, you've got an Australian connection. You played alongside Darren Bennett at the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, Darren and I were extremely close when we were teammates. I was a teammate of his for three seasons, and he was exceptionally good at his job and then was an incredibly better person, too. And, when things unraveled for me and I struggled, he was always a guy that had my back. And I was just so amazed with what he could do with the football. I mean, we would throw into a bucket from like 30 or 40 yards. Like, he'd kick it into the bucket. That's how accurate he was with a football. So he did some amazing things. Great guy, continues to live in San Diego. I ran into him a year or two ago at an event. So it was really good to see him.
Hey, Ryan, we spent a lot of time talking. In our game, AFL football, you can be drafted as an 18-year-old, and you know the pressure that is applied on 18-year-olds going the number one draft pick in the AFL draft, that type of thing. But how head-spinning was it for you back coming out of college as, I'm assuming you would have been 21, 22 years of age? Is that right?
Yeah, I was 21 years old when I was drafted. I thought this was exactly how it was supposed to be, right? This is where I was headed. So when I was drafted first over or in the first round and given a contract for that size, I believe that's the way it was supposed to be. So I expected big things. I don't know if I fully understood the scrutiny that would come with it. Also, the start of the internet, kind of aging myself here with that statement, but it was amazing to see the amount of pressure and the amount of scrutiny and the magnifying glass that came with it. I did not anticipate that or plan for that in any way to deal with it in a healthy manner.
Your contract, I think you said on All the Smoke on the podcast that I listened to, was like $30 million. Was that the first contract that you signed?
Yeah, it was the largest contract in NFL history at the time. $31.5 million. It would be eclipsed by Peyton Manning about a week later when he signed his contract by about, not by much, by like $250,000. But yeah, it was a scenario where I didn't think about money. I didn't necessarily believe it would change me, but I can say that it gave me a sense of self-importance that isn't real, but I manifested it because of that. You know, I just thought I was a better person because of what I got to do and how much I made. I was rich and famous, and that's in America, that's what I believed success to be at the time. Of course, that's changed significantly, but that was how I thought of it in the moment.
So we'll get to the challenges that you've had to confront over the past 10 years or so, but your name will always be linked with Peyton Manning. So Peyton comes, he's the Hall of Fame and one of the greatest players of all time. He's taken at pick one, you're taking at pick two, you're at the draft camp, you're rooming together, so you're going to be linked forever. Is that part of the pressures that you had to confront? Tim talks about the pressure. You won your first two games with San Diego. He lost his first two games. You're on top of the world. You think it's going to last forever and ever, but it doesn't. Do you see yourself comparing, his life to the way that yours ended up turning out?
No, I think that would probably be pretty detrimental. He's a guy that I probably easily could resent, but I don't. We've stayed close. He's a good friend. If I need anything, any kind of support, I reach out to him. And, he made a good comment. He made a comment to me last year around this time. We were in Canton for his induction into the Hall of Fame. And he said, "Hey, man, we're both 46 years old. We're both, in broadcasting now, retired football players and dads." I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, it was a perfect practice in being where your feet are in the moment. So there was no resentment on why or how or if. I was really proud of him because I know how hard it is to be a successful NFL quarterback, and to be one of the greatest ever to play is such an achievement. So yeah, we've kind of come full circle, I suppose, with different paths along the way, but we're kind of in the same spots now.
Hey Ryan, your life spiraled out of control. What was the worst, the depth that you actually found yourself at, what was the worst part of that?
Well, I mean, you'd think it would be ending up in prison, right? You'd think that would be it. I suppose any moment where I was contemplating taking my own life, I mean, that's got to be the worst thing in the world, that you believe in your mind that everybody and yourself is better off with you not here than to be here, right? That's probably the bottom of it all. But I would probably argue that there isn't a real bottom or a lowest until you're gone. As long as you keep getting back up, I think that might be my superpower. Tripping myself up, getting knocked down, and finding a way to get back up. That may be ultimately what is my purpose.
Well, often people talk about this. They say, I had to hit rock bottom. I hit rock bottom, and that was the trigger for me to turn my life around. But you've got a different view about that.
Well, I think there just comes a point where you make a choice, right? You either have to go another direction or you're going to die. I mean, I don't put a ton of importance on the bottom of things because, ultimately it's what got me to where I needed to get to. So it's almost in some senses a gratitude thing. I mean, when I talk to people, when I speak, I say, how grateful I was to have spent 32 months in prison. I don't recommend it, but I'm grateful for it. And I think that's a perspective that I have that's different, I think. But most people that have gone through it will say that, I was still here. It may have been a miserable time, but I was still here. And there's a lot of us, peers of mine who played in the NFL, friends, other human beings who have just disappeared or who are gone. And that isn't the case. And that for me is ultimately what I believe to be the bottom.
We're speaking with Ryan Leaf, who's got an amazing story to tell, former number two pick and an NFL quarterback at San Diego. Ryan, I was interested listening to some stuff, and you played these two games, you got yourself hurt, you had a bad third game, had a blow up with the media, which was captured, and then it got replayed, and then you went after the journalist that reported it. And then you said that you were portrayed in the media as the guy who wore the black hat, which is the villain, if you like, and that instead of you being your own authentic self, you adopted that mantra and said, okay, if that's what you want me to be, then I will be that. Was that one of the things that was challenging the most in terms of trying to live your life authentically, but then saying, no, I'll be what the media are portraying me as?
Yeah, I think so. I think it really was, it was more kind of a resentment thing too. When people would be hypercritical of me, I was just kind of like, screw you. I got this, rather than, retreating and maybe taking a good look at myself in the mirror with some of my actions and things like that. So, you look at Dennis Rodman and how he leaned into that, and, he was just a different, to be able to do that, your central nervous system is going to be on tilt at all times. You're always going to have to protect yourself and be up. And it takes a certain human being to be able to do that and still perform at the level in which he did. And I wasn't capable of performing against the best defenses in the world week in, week out, and then battling the deep, battling media, battling my teammates, my bosses, fans. I mean, you can't be who you're not, in a sense, and still be good at what you do as a job.
Hey Ryan, before we talked about that first contract, $30 million, and that was back in 1998. Of that, how much did you walk away with from the game? How much did you have left of that $30 million by the time you walked away from the game?
Well, when I walked out of prison, I didn't have a dime.
Not a cent, not a Zach.
Not a cent. And I think that may have been one of the hardest things for me to finally admit. Like, I was in a position of the money was more important than, like, if somebody knew I was a drug addict or a felon, that was better than people knowing I was broke. Yeah. Right? That was worse. It's amazing what your mind will do and trick you into thinking what is important. And, yeah, luckily for me, when I walked out of those prison doors, my mom and dad were there. There was a place for me to crash and lay my head until I figured things out. The NFL had a grant available to former players if they were seeking treatment and the help that they need. And luckily I applied for that and was granted it. So it paid for my treatment when I got out. And then I went to work, you know, I went to work in the recovery side of things. Job paid $15 an hour. But I tell people all the time, you know, I was making $5 million a year and was miserable and was a miserable person to be around and be. And now I was making $15 an hour and felt more value than I'd ever felt before. So that, you know, money was never the issue. Now money's all about taking care of my family now. That's all it is meaningful to me in any way, right? I need to work hard enough to make sure my family is taken care of. Me and how it presents or positions me in the eyes of others, you know, meaningless. You can think I'm a millionaire, or you can think I'm broke. It doesn't matter. It's not going to change, you know, what other people think of me. It's none of my business type of mentality.
Was there a moment in jail, Ryan? So you're addicted to prescription drugs, your burglaries, you find yourself in jail. You're railing against that. You can't believe that you know, the man is in jail. You're not getting the respect you think you deserve. Was there a moment when you were in jail that triggered this, you know, this change in mindset that now has you where you are today?
Yeah. I mean, there is. At the time, I didn't see it, right? I didn't understand that because for about 26 of the 32 months I was in prison, I didn't do anything. I sat on my butt and I played the victim and I blamed others. And my roommate suggested we go down to the prison library one day and start helping prisoners who didn't know how to read, learn how to read. And, you know, I had many of those come to Jesus moments in my life from coaches and mentors and family. And I didn't do anything about it. Right. I chose not to. And I can't tell you why I went that day. You know, I can't tell you why I went and did that. But I did, and it changed my perspective because I walked into a room where there was a fellow, you know, human being in a place where you're not supposed to show vulnerability or anything, asked for help. I said, "Ryan, I can't read. Can you help me?" And I don't think I'd ever heard another man say something like that to another man. And so it shifted my mindset. Now, I didn't understand it was happening in the moment, right? You never do. But years later now, I can look back and see that was a catalyst because I started making it about other people and not me. I was being of service to another human being for the first time in my life. And that truly is the answer to where I'm at, you know, 10 years later now. It's the only reason.
Talking to Ryan Leaf, former number two NFL draft pick quarterback. On reflection now, when you think back to your life, your early childhood, the fact that you would have been feted and idolized as an athlete, do you think that contributed in any way to how it turned out for you?
Sorry, can you say that again?
Do you think the way that you were feted and idolized as a young man and maybe concessions that were given to you about behavior or the way that you treated other people as a young athlete, do you think that contributed in any way to where you ended up?
Definitely. I mean, that pedestal you get placed on, right, as an athlete, because you have a golden arm or you can do this or the other. A lot of times people aren't willing to hold you accountable for your actions because they need you on that field, right? They need you to do that. And when you have success, you know, there's nothing really anybody can do. You may be one of the most disliked people out there, but if you can come and compete every week and you are the hero, I mean, no one really can walk away and say, well, the guy's a jerk, but he's really good at what he does. So if you can't back it up with your play on the field, then it's a different story. So yeah, I think I was enabled. And then I surrounded myself with people who enabled my behavior. Guys that, you know, anybody who were critical of me and were trying to help or show me the mirror, I pushed out of my life, right? I surrounded myself with yes men, and never was truly held accountable. And certainly I wasn't going to hold myself accountable, right? I mean, I had never done that my whole life. Why would I start now?
Hey, Ryan, we've only scratched the surface. We get real time feedback as we're going. We have a text machine here, and the response to your story is amazing. We're going to direct people to your podcast, Bust the Ryan Leaf Story, it's called, and the listening on that will be compulsory. And it's a great story. We love hearing it. We appreciate you joining us from the other side of the world, and we wish you well in your next endeavors.
Hey, you guys, thanks for taking the time. This has been pretty cool. I've never been to Australia. I hope to someday. I don't know if I'm allowed because I'm a convicted felon, but maybe someday I'll be able to come.
Well, you got your life back on track, and that's the most important thing. If you do make it down here, we'd love to see you here in the studio in Melbourne. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet, fellas. Thanks for taking the time. Good to meet you.
How good? How good is that? Now, everyone wants to know where you can hear this story. Bust is the name of the podcast, the Ryan Leaf story. We listen to a podcast about...
All the Smoke we listen to, yep.
Yeah, All the Smoke. And we'll put all that up on our socials. And you can follow Ryan's story. And what a great fella. What an articulate story to tell. And wasn't always the case, as by his own admission. Lost all sense of perspective along the way, but has now regained it. And great story of redemption there.